Bonnie may come. I don't know.
Okay.
No, she left.
Oh, she left.
Peric Zion. The last thing we did, I believe, was the dream. Did we discuss the dream?
See where we are.
Did we discuss the Midianites' dream about the toast and the tent?
We did discuss that.
Sure, we talked about. I even re-listened to the tape a little bit to see that makes the recording.
So that was a test.
Yeah, it was a test.
Right. The toast is a test.
The bread and the tent. We talked about the symbolism of each of them, the Omer, the toast being reflecting the bread, the professional context of the farmers representing Israel, the tent representing the nomadic tribes of Midian, and the sense that Midian had that this battle was going to end not in their favor, even though they are a force by sheer numbers in the hundreds of thousands. Nonetheless, they have this boding sense that this is not going to end in their favor. Gideon overhears that conversation between the two guards about this dream and its resolution. And from that, he is reinvigorated with a new sense of devotion, commitment, and courage. That's where we're up to, Pasuk Tedvav. Vayhi chishmo Gidon et mispa hachalom ve'et shivro vayishtachu. Gidon heard mispa hachalom. Mispa hachalom means the telling of the dream. From the word lesaper. The recounting of the dream. Ve'et shivro. And it's resolution.
This is interpretation.
Resolution. Much as Yosef, when he is reflecting or just interpreting the dreams to the Sarha Mashkim and the Sarha Ofim, it describes how each one heard the dream and its interpretation. It's actually when the Sarha Tabachim is reflecting on the story to Paro, and he says, each one according to the resolution of the dream we dreamt, and then when he reflects on Yosef, each one according to the dream he resolved, patah. Liftor chalom, shever means shivron is a reflection on the resolution of a riddle, resolution of the dream. So for Gidon, it wasn't just the dream that was significant, it was also the fact that he heard, good morning, he heard not only the dream, but also the reflection on the dream as told by not himself. He's not interpreting the dream. The significance here is that the dream is being interpreted by by the Midianites themselves. Right? Each one is telling, one dreamt it, and the other is telling the first one, Ein zeki im cherev Gidon. This is the sword of Gidon. So Gidon is hearing this conversation. Yashav el machane Yisrael. He comes back to Vayishtachu. He bows down. He acknowledges. He thanks the Rabbanu Shlolam. He goes back to the camp of Israel. Vayomer kumu. Arise, God has given you the camp of Midian. That's, I think, where we got up to last year. So at this point, we begin the details of the battle. So far, just to break it down for us, we've had the gathering of the armies, Midian in Emek Israel, Midian Amalek Bnei Kedem, Gidon's forces south by Har Gilboa, as well as a call to arms from the north, although there's some mystery as to what happened to the soldiers in the north. We'll find out very shortly. Of the 32,000 soldiers that he originally had, at the story of the water by the river, he sends away 31,700, and he's left with 300 soldiers that God has selected for him for this battle. Then goes down to the camp of Midian. He hears the dream of the two Midianites talking about how this battle will end in Israel's favor, is reinvigorated with courage, comes back and begins the battle plan. Smallest army against the largest army, or one of the largest armies in this period of history. And the story begins thus. Yachatz et shlosh me'ot ha'ish shlosha rashim. Divided the 300 soldiers that were with him, the 300 men, into three heads. What are three heads?
Three branches.
Three branches, we would call them three columns. Right? Three different groups, three different fighting groups. Vayten shofarot biyad kulam. To each he gave a shofar. Now, how did he have 300 shofarot? Where did he get 300 shofarot from?
300 lambs.
150 lambs.
Interesting question, right? How did he get 300 shofarot? So it's
maybe the soldiers came. Could they have each come with, as part of their battle arms? They brought
Them. Some of them did, certainly. Good morning. Good morning. Some of them certainly did. We're going to come back to that in a moment. Vayiten shofarot biyad kulam. V'chadim rekim, empty pitchers. V'lapidim b'toch hakadim, and lit torches inside the pitchers. That's how he equipped his soldiers. Shofar, kadim, or pottery, earthenware pitchers, and torches.
Where are the swords?
The swords are there too, but that he doesn't have to equip them with. That, I think, goes without saying, that they came with swords.
This is their vision of night.
Correct.
Night vision.
That's it. That's the night vision. That's the military equipment. Now, so where did they get the shofarot for? How did they get 300 shofarot? The answer to that question is, if you go back to Perek Zion, go back to the beginning of the Perek, when he sends the army back originally, in Pasuk Chet, when he's left with his 300 soldiers and he sends away the remaining 10,000, Vayikhu et tzeda ha'am bi'adam, Pasuk Chet, he took the provisions that the people had brought, ve'et shofrotehem, ve'et kol ish Yisrael shilach ish lo alav, and he took their shofarot.
So they all had one.
Did they some have one? What was going on?
Where did they come from originally?
Yeah. So the answer to this the riddle that lies between these two psukim is the key to understanding his strategy. Not an arbitrary collection of shofarot. These shofarot are the key to understanding Gidon's strategy. Who carries a shofar? Think of all the movies of the ancient, you know, battle,
I haven't seen
you know, dreams. Who blows the trumpet? Who blows the shofar? Who's calling the, you know, does every soldier on the battlefield
no,
and on horses carry a shofar? No, the head of the division, the head of the of the whatever you want to call it, and you know, the troops. The but if, and if you have different groups fighting in different fronts, so each one has a shofar to call to arms to begin the battle, and behind them are all the soldiers. So if you have a force of 32,000 soldiers, they're not one army. 32,000 soldiers means that there's a militia that's coming from this group, and there's a militia coming from this group, and there's a, and each one of these groups had a shofar, because as you come together, whether it be on horseback or camel or mule or by on foot, whatever military structure you have, the one standing at the front is carrying the shofar and the banner, and everybody else is behind. Well, everybody else has been sent home. So they hand over the shofar from each one of these different groups to the 300 remaining soldiers. So now I have 300 soldiers and 300 shofars with no column behind them. See, that's the key piece here. Well, he's going to use them. He's going to use them. Gideon's going to use them. Gideon is a... is a strategist, is a tactician. He's got 300 soldiers and he's got to attack an army of 120 plus thousand.
So each one is a
coward? So what his plan, his plan, the key, he knows very well. He knows very well, and I think it's very important to recognize this, because this is how the battle is going to unfold. He knows very well that if he has to go into a frontal attack, 300 soldiers against 120,000 soldiers, he doesn't stand a chance. You can't. There isn't enough time in the day for 300 soldiers to fight 120,000. Just unless you're Lord of the Rings or whatever his name is, right? It doesn't work. So he's got to do something to disrupt the army. To his advantage, the other side, Midian, Bnei Kedem, Amalek, are not one army either. To his advantage, the other side is comprised of nomadic tribes. And if there's one thing we know about tribes, is that organizational structure, chain of command, is not their strong point. So there's no uniform, there's no command structure, there's no mechanism for communication. He has two things on his side, and he's lost, to an extent he's lost the element of surprise, because the army of the two armies have been gathering together for war, so they know the war is coming. But he has one thing going for him that he does, that essentially is his key tactic, which is that most armies don't attack in the middle of the night. So if he can disrupt the army in the middle of the night, confuse them enough so that they don't know who or what is attacking them, he stands a chance of breaking their ranks before he has to actually engage them.
So did they read this before they did in Tebi?
Maybe before the War of Independence.
I read this a long time ago. I'll tell you some interesting stories about... Sefer Shoftim and its role in Israeli military strategy, but that's after we finish the story. So he arms each one with a shofar, with a pitcher, and with a torch, a lit torch inside the pitcher. Why a lit torch inside the pitcher?
It diffuses, it's not a bright light.
It's not a light at all. Right? If you close it, it's disguised. He needs to attack under the cover of darkness, but he needs to have light for the actual campaign. So that's his trick. He takes the torch, hides it in the pitcher, so you can't see, can move the army under the cover of darkness, divide him into three heads into three columns or three groups. Why three and not four? Three you use to? I assume three because you're going to attack from
three sides.
Why not four? This is both a tactic and an interesting military halacha. It's in the Rambam in Hilchot Melachim. Right. The Rambam Paskin says you're not allowed to attack an army from four sides. You have to leave an escape route. Mm. Now, in the context of the Rambam's psak, that's a function of compassion. That if the army wants to run, you have to leave them that option. In Gideon's case, it's not only a function of compassion, it's also the key to his tactic.
Right.
He has no chance in a frontal attack. His only chance is if he can confuse them enough to get them to run. He's too outnumbered. And that's precisely what he does.
Well, that's also, only having 300 men, it makes it much easier to do this stealthily, though, because you're not moving a massive number of troops around.
100%. Absolutely. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayomer Alehem. Mimeni tiru v'chein ta'asu. Look, follow me, do what I do. Watch my cue. Do as I do. V'nei anochi ba b'kzeh ha'machaneh. As soon as I reach the edge of the camp, follow my lead. Whatever I do, you do. The taka'ati b'shofar anochi v'chol asher iti, utka'atem b'shofarot gamatem svivot kol ha'machaneh. As I blow my shofar, you will blow your shofar surrounding the camp. Has almost it's almost reminiscent of the story of Yericho. He blew the shofar to bring the walls down. In this case, they blew the shofar to disrupt the army that's inside. Va'amartem la'Hashem v'le'Gidon. And at the same time that you blow the shofar, you call out, scream out, la'Hashem v'le'Gidon, that the people should know that this battle is being fought, number one, by us, and number two, for the sake of, or number one, for the sake of heaven, and number two, who is leading this battle. ויבוא גדעון ומאה איש אשר איתו בקצה המחנה, ראש האשמורת התיכונה, אך הקם הקימו את השומרים. They attack, the edge, they come to the edge of the camp, ראש האשמורת התיכונה, the beginning of the middle watch, meaning almost the dark, under the cover of the darkest part of the night. The night is divided up into three time periods, the early part of the evening, the middle of the night, and the latter hours towards morning. Each one is called a watch because in the context of, in a military context, you would divide into three watches or three shifts through the night. That was also the case of how they divided up the avodah in the temple. And Rosh of the Kohanim, Rosh HaAshmorat HaTichona, the beginning of the middle watch. Achakim Ekimu Et HaShomrim. They just the awoke the guards, or they just as the changing of the guards at the beginning, they at that moment. Ve'itku b'shofarot v'nafotz hakadim asher biyadam. They blew the shofarot and they broke the pitchers to take the light out of the pitcher, the torch out of the pitcher. They didn't just remove it; they smashed the pitchers. 300 pitchers being smashed at the same moment. Also, for the purpose of
the startling,
right?
The noise.
Right, exactly. And again, the parallel to Yericho is very compelling. Vayitku'u shloshet haroshim b'shofarot, vayishberu akadim. They blew the shofars, they broke the pitchers. Vayachaziku biyad smolam b'lapidim uviyad yeminam ha'shofarot litkoa. Left hand is holding the torch, right hand is holding the shofar. Where are the swords?
In
their sheath, right? They haven't had the hand for the sword. They're not fighting this thing with the sword. They're fighting this battle with the shofar. The parallel to Yericho is very compelling. It's very powerful. Because Yericho is all about a battle fought by God, not by man. And that's exactly the message that Gideon is trying to send. Vayikra'u Cherev LaHashem uleGidon. Sword of God and Gideon. Did I tell you the story of this, the phrase Cherev Gideon, Sword of Gideon? Yeah, anybody ever hear the book Sword of Gideon?
Sounds familiar.
Sounds familiar?
Yeah,
I'll tell you the story in a minute, and you'll know exactly, you'll see how familiar it is. But to understand it, we need to do one more paragraph. Vayamdu ish tachtav saviv lamachaneh. They surrounded the camp. Vayaratz kol lamachaneh. Vayariu. Vayanusu. The camp begins to run, scatter, cry out. Vayitku shlosh me'ot ha-shofarot. 300 shofars continue to blow. Vayasim Hashem et cherev ish bereyehu. B'chol lamachaneh. That's where the Hashgacha comes in. That's where divine providence comes in. At some point or another, up until now, everything Gideon has done. At some point or another, we need to understand where God's hand comes in. All of this could have easily failed if the people would have taken a moment to turn around and recognize that these 300 shofarot don't represent 300 patrols, platoons, columns attacking from 300 sides, but they represent 300 individual soldiers. The battle would have been over before it began. But they didn't. They stopped, they took a look, they heard the shofar, they see the torches on some kind of march from three sides. In their mind, what they're being attacked by is an army surrounding them on three sides of enormous power and number, and they get frightened. Vayasem Hashem ish et cherev ish b'ra'eu. They begin to fight each other. It's completely pitch black. They don't know whose friend and whose foe. That's the confusion. And they begin to fight each other. Vayanos ha-machaneh ad bet ha-shita, Sererata. Then they begin to flee. And they flee down to bet ha-shita, down to Tzrera, ad Sfat Avel Mochola al Tabat. Where these places are is unclear. I think on the maps there is some... if you look on the first map, the middle map in English, which says the War of Gideon in Ein Dor, which is where the battle actually takes place, Givat Har Gaboa to the south, Har Tavor to the north, Givat Hamoreh in the middle. Do you see that? The map right in the middle. Right, those are the three heads that attack, right? The three pronged arrow that attacks the camp of Midian, and the direction of the flight of Midian southeast. Okay. Do you see it? So they're attacking. Here, if you look at it on this map here, they're attacking. Gideon's army is attacking from the south. Remember that the standoff. Remember that the standoff was Gideon and Har Gilboa. The northern forces were supposed to come down to Har Tavor, although we had some story about what happened to those forces in Har Tavor. And Midian is in the valley, typically, Emek Yisrael. Gideon's forces attack from three sides in this direction, forcing the escape of the army, or the flight of the army, southeast, headed over, and this is the direction that they're going to go, across the Jordan, right opposite the area of Har Ephraim, near the Yabok River. They're going to flee down this way into the Jordan Valley. They're going to try to cross over the Jordan Valley here along the Yabok River, and from there head home, straight across Saudi Arabia. Home.
So
that's a mismatch because it's got Tabat here. The one on the right in the corner, then, in other words, that's where they're going is Tabat?
Correct. That's where they're headed. They're headed down from to Emek Beit Shan and then across.
But that shows you exactly how.
Correct. That's the flight of. Midian. That's right. That's the bottom map on the bottom right is the flight of Midian. From Emek Beit Shan, from Endor on the top, Emek Beit Shan, Tabat. They're going to cross over the Jordan just opposite where it says Sukkot and Pnuel. We'll get to there in a moment. And then continue down. Now, what happens next, where are we up to? Pasuk of Gimel.
But they make it sound very simple. There had to have been something really, like you say it's divine providence by Hashem, but there must have been something. I mean, all they did was hear the breaking. That was enough
It wasn't so much the breaking. It was a combination. Surprise. The key here is that key here is the confusion. In the minds of the Midianites, what they're seeing are, under the cover of darkness, you can't see the army.
Right.
So what you see are all of the symbols
and
all of the signs... The indicators of armies attacking them from three sides.
And a big army. They're assuming it's a big army.
And they're assuming they don't know the size, but it's enough to create confusion. It's enough to create confusion under the cover of darkness. And remember that the armies themselves don't know who within the camp of Midian. They don't know who's friend and who's foe. Because there's no uniforms, there's no command and control system. There is just group of nomadic tribes. So as they're being, or sense that they're being attacked, they drew their swords and they start to fight each other.
They're fighting
each other, right? But they don't know who they're fighting, they're just fighting. So that's the whole key. Vayasem Hashem cherev ish bere'eu. That the army itself is so confused that they kill each other. Gideon didn't have to lift a finger.
Right, exactly.
Right, it's exactly. Yeah, well, destroyed by friendly fire. Right? Exactly right. And then they start to flee. In the flight, now, sun is coming up soon. Right? In the flight, now he's got to bring in, right? He can either let them go, or he can run after them. And that's the key piece to this. In most cases, we would say, let them go, and we're done. Right? They've left. Gideon is not one to let them off the hook that easily. So, Pasuk of Gimel, Vayitzaek ish Yisrael min Naphtali umin Asher umin kol Menashe vayirdefu acharei Midian. Remember his reinforcements from the north? Naphtali, Asher, and Menashe? Now he calls in the reinforcements. Stage one, he attacked with 300 soldiers. He's got them on the run. Now he's got to chase them. But chasing them, 300 soldiers in the middle of the day isn't going to do the trick. So now he calls in the reinforcements.
So he didn't send them that far away.
No, remember he sent them to watch Mahar Gilboa.
Okay.
Right? He sent them to watch. Right? Now he brings in his reinforcements. Not only does he bring in his reinforcements from the north, Naphtali, Asher, and Menasheh, 1, 2, 3 columns coming down from the north to run behind Midian and chase them away. That's one piece of it. But Umalachim Shalach Gideon Bechol Har Ephraim. Now we have a new component. We haven't had Ephraim up until now. In the beginning of the story, he called in an army from Menashe, Naphtali, Asher, Zvulun, all the forces of the north. As they're fleeing down through the Jordan Valley, they're going to cross over by the Abok River. That is right opposite Shiloh. Shiloh belongs to Ephraim. Malachim shalach Gideon b'chol har Ephraim lemor redu likrat Midian. Go, run after Midian. Lechu lahem et hamayim ad bet barav et yarden. Catch them by the water. By the crossover of the Yarden. In other words, they're coming down this way. Ephraim's going to come up this way, and then a classic pincer attack is going to surround them on both sides, only this time with a real army. And this time, goal being to destroy. Vayitzaek kol ish Ephraim. Vayilkedu et ha'mayim ad bet barav et ha'yarden. Indeed, Ephraim comes and they cross, they catch up with with these, with the army. Vayilkedu shnei sarei Midyan. Et Orev ve'et Ze'ev, they captured the two Sarei Midyan, the two generals, whose names are Orev and Ze'ev. Ve'hargu et Orev b'tzur Orev, ve'et Ze'ev hargu b'yekev Ze'ev. They killed Orev at the cleft of Orev, and they killed Ze'ev in the vineyard of Ze'ev. That's convenient.
Did the name come first?
Clearly, they were named because of the event, not in the other way around. Vayirdefu el Midyan. They begin, continue to chase Midyan. V'rosh Orev uze'ev heviu el Gidon me'ever le'yarden. And they bring the heads of Orev and Ze'ev to Gidon on the other side of the Yarden. What is Gidon doing on the other side of the Yarden?
That means he crossed the east side of the
Correct.
Yarden.
Correct. Okay. What's he doing on the east side of the Yarden?
Isn't he following the Midianites?
He's following the Midianites. They're going home. They're running. And Gidon is running
them.
After them.
It's interesting. The wine press comes into it again. Does that mean anything? That's what it says in the English translation. That's where he's
The Yekev is the when they killed him. Well, maybe.
Did he decide all of this on his own? Does he have any nevuah?
He doesn't have a nevuah. He has some sort of communication with God at the beginning. I'm not sure whether it's through a malach or through a navi or directly.
This is classic military strategy.
But this is classic military strategy. Once he's told that he's got 300 soldiers, now go and deal with the army, and he's got to think it through. So, like in most biblical stories, the whole point is that there's an element of strategy, thought, effort, which can easily fail if it doesn't have together with it an element of divine engagement or providence. That's essentially the story of Purim. The story of Purim is you can do and do and do and do and do until some point or another there has to be a moment of hashgacha that turns the table. That's exactly what happened here. You can attack an army of 100,000 soldiers or 300 soldiers under the cover of darkness, but how many things can go wrong until Vayasam Hashem Ish Cherev? So they've killed Orev and Ze'ev, the two generals, and Gidon is in pursuit.
Because their name for the place.
No?
Not, why would they be Jewish? I mean, Ze'ev is, could be a Hebrew name, but I'm not so late.
A lot of confused now. Yeah,
or
Israeli name.
Yeah, but I don't think that that's...
Doesn't
Zed
mean wolf?
Mm-hmm.
It's
modern.
Yeah, okay.
So that's what it is in Hebrew. I'm not sure what it means in Midianese.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Hand these pages out, too. Let's go a little bit further. Vayamu elav ish Ephraim. The people of Ephraim come to Gidon. Now they're taking a moment's pause. They catch up to Ephraim, to Gidon, with the heads of Orev and Ze'ev in their hands. A little gruesome, but alright. V'yamu elav ish Ephraim, ma hadavar hazeh asit lanu? They said to Gidon, what did you do to us? Livilti krot lanu. You didn't call us? Ki halachta li lachem b'midyan, that you went to fight with Midian without us? V'yirivun ito b'choska, and they strove with him, they fought with him. What's the issue? What's the taina, the complaint, that Bnei Ephraim have to Gidon? They have a very harsh complaint.
That he didn't call them to the battle.
When
he called Naphtali and all of that, maybe?
Correct. Yes. When he had an initial call to arms, back in Perek Vav, you look at Perek Vav, Pasuk Lamed, Hey. Umalachim shalach b'chol menashe, ויזעק גם הוא אחריו, ומלאכים שלח באשר ובזבולון ובנפתלי. He sent messengers to call Menashe, Zebulun, Naphtali, Asher, 1, 2, 3, 4, all of the tribes surrounding Emek Yisrael. Why didn't he bring up Ephraim?
Because if you're talking about strategy, you probably thought they weren't good soldiers or something.
No, maybe, but still, he certainly needed them in the end. He certainly called on them at the end. He said, called on them for
catch him at the Jordan.
Right, to catch him at the Jordan. And in fact, they're the ones, if you think about it, who fight the battle. They're the ones who fight the battle.
Was that to give them an escape route still?
He didn't want to share the spoils of war with them. It's hard to understand why he didn't call them.
Right, it's hard to understand why he didn't call them. He didn't call them. For whatever reason he had in his mind, it's not clear why. But when push came to shove and the battle was running and they were and in the end he says, okay, guys, they're running past you, go and catch them. Suddenly he needs them. So they come to him and they said, okay, we did your bidding. But what is this? We're an afterthought? What, do we chop liver? Right? You ignored us? They have a very good point. So Gideon responds to them in classic diplomacy. Vayomer alehem, me'asiti ata kachem. What have I done compared to what you have done? Halo tov olalot Ephraim mivtzir aviezer. The olalot are grapes in their initial stage when they're just beginning to buds of, I don't know what they call grapes when they're just beginning to bud.
Gleanings.
All right. Olalot Ephraim, mivtzir Menashe, from the harvest of Menashe. Meaning, Gideon is from Menashe. It says the gleanings, the small pieces or achievements of Ephraim outnumber in significance the great achievements of Menashe. Why?
Killed the generals.
Correct. In your hands God gave the two generals. What could I have done compared to what you, the great warriors of Ephraim, have done? Gideon knows diplomacy, right? Gideon knows diplomacy.
Before he was called by God.
That's right. Working for the UN. Az raftaru chamealav dabro davar hazeh. They were appeased. They were supplicated. Fine, they can go back. Vayavo Gideon yardena. Gideon crosses the Yarden. Over hu ushlosh mot ha'ish asher ito. Ayefim v'rotfim. Crosses the Yarden.
Which side of the Yarden?
He's on the Yarden. We're going back a little bit. Now we're going back to part two of the story. Part two of the story is what happens.
He's east when
he's talking to Ephraim. But now we take a break. Going back to the story of what he's doing. So now it's telling us. He crossed over the Yarden, exhausted, tired. Now, there are two cities on the banks of the Yabok River. They are on the map. They are called Sukkot and Pnuel. They are significant places historically. They are significant places historically, specifically from the story of where we heard of Sukkot and Pnuel so far.
In the wandering and coming to Eretz Yisrael, wasn't
it? That's true. Actually, I have to go back even further. Bnei Yisrael come to Sukkot too, but that's a different Sukkot.
Okay.
And the Sukkot that we're talking about here on the Yabok River is specifically referenced in Sefer Breshit in the story of Yaakov Avinu. Sukkot is the city that he comes to immediately after his separation from Esav. And Penuel is the place that he comes to when he sees the Malach. And actually it's called Penuel because, or Penuel because of the facing of, that's where he has the fight with the Malach. So these two places, Sukkot and Penuel, have a kind of historical reference to the story of Yaakov Avinu. He comes to the people of Sukkot, and he says to them, "Tnu na kikrot lechem la'am asher b'raglai. Give me bread for the people in my charge."
Now, the people of Sukkot wouldn't have been one of part of the 12 tribes, right?
Sure, they would have been from Shevet Reuven.
Okay,
all right. Yabok River, Reuven, Gad, and Menashe. So they would most likely have been from Shevet Gad or either Shevet Gad or Menashe. Either Shevet Gad or Menashe. Ki ayefim hem. My soldiers are weary. And we're not finished because we have a long journey to go. I've got to find and chase and take out the two kings of Midian, Zevach and Tzalmunna. He's got the generals, Orev and Zeev, but Zevach and Tzalmunna are his target. Vayomer Sarei Sukkot, Hakav Zevach v'Tzalmunna ata biyadecha ki niten litzva'acha lachem. Are you, do you have the heads of Zevach and Tzalmunna that we should give bread to your soldiers? What's the official term for quarter? To give quarter to the soldiers?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the term? Vayomer Gidon, what's his response? Remember Gidon the diplomat. Right? Gidon knows diplomacy. So Gidon's diplomatic answer is, "Lachen betet Hashem et zevach ve'efet tzalmunna biyadi, v'dashtir b'zarchem et kotzei hamidbar ve'et barkanim." When I have the heads of Zevach and Tzalmunna in my hands, I will make your skins intimately familiar with the thorns and bristles of the desert.
Let's try.
So interesting, Gidon knows when to be diplomatic and when not to be diplomatic. He has the exact same conversation with the people of Penuel. When I come back, I will take out this tower. What is he going to knock over the water tower? What tower are we talking about? What's a Migdal?
A lookout tower.
A fort.
It's the watchtower.
It's the place where the army sits, the king sits, the control, the power. Right. In other words, you start with me, and I'll deal with you too. I'll come back to that little episode and the comparison between his attitude towards Penuel and Sukkot and the attitude towards Bnei Ephraim, Bezat Hashem, in our, but probably next week. I just want to read through the whole story first. Vezevach v'tzamuna b'karkor. Zevach and Tzalmunna had reached all the way to Karkor. Where Karkor is unclear. But it's off the map. It's probably already their home base, which would put them, if you look at map page 4, you have Tzirata and Eva Mochola, and you have all the places mentioned in the right. Flight, right?
Yeah.
And map in six, map, is it 6 or 5? There you go. 6. Now you have all the way to Karkor. Use your imagination. We're talking about.
That's far. Isn't it far?
Well, there's scale that's 20 kilometers, I'm assuming.
It's about 200 kilometers, by my guess.
Yeah. That's, it's 130 miles, give or take. It's a nice distance.
Mm-hmm. וזבח בצמונה בקרקור ומאחניהם אימם כחמשת עשר אלף. And he has an army of 15,000. כל הנותרים מכל מחנה בני קדם. That's what's left. והנופלים 120 אלף. איש שלב חרב. After 120,000 fell in the battle. Part in the original battle, each for Eyu, part with the sword against each other, part in the battle with Ephraim. Total number of the decimated army was 120. He's left with 15,000. Vayal Gidon derech hashchunei ba'oalim mikedem lenovach v'yogbaha. Gidon chased them along a route known as the caravan route. Derech shchunei ba'oalim. Those who dwell in tents. The caravan route, which is the road. And it's interesting, names of roads. Roads in the ancient world were named by their functionality, either by their functionality or by their destination. Right? Derech Beit Lechem is the road that leads to Beit Lechem. Derech HaMelech is the road that was the king's highway, which is the main road north-south. Derech HaChof, we talked about these roads and their names. Mm-hmm. So this one that cuts across the middle of the desert, who travels along the middle of the desert? We're not talking about the road that goes along the water route. That would be Derech HaMelech, along the water route. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu asked to do. When he wanted to go through Eretz Yichon, he asked, he said, Derech HaMelech Nilech. We'll go through the king's road. We won't veer right or left. That's where the water is. That's where the main road are. Who crosses the middle of the Saudi Arabia desert?
Nomads.
Right? Nomads. Those who can travel by camel. And therefore it's called Derech HaShchunei Ba'olim. Carry their houses on their backs. Gidon arrives, vayach et ha-machane, v'ha-machane haya betach. He attacks the camp when the camp was secure, meaning
they thought they were out of danger.
They were out of danger. They were sitting and celebrating their quote-unquote victory. Vayanusu zevach v'tzamuna, vayirdof acharehem. Zevach v'tzamuna ran away. Gidon ran after them. וילכוד את שני מלכי מדיין את זרח ואת סמונה וכל המחנה החליט. Captured זרח וצמונה and he destroyed the army.
Why is his father mentioned here?
Whose father?
Gideon.
In Pasuk Gimel, Vayashiv Gideon ben Yoash? Interesting. Not sure. Probably formality. The victor. Now he's the returning victor. Now he's Gidon.
Yes. Yes.
Now he gets respect. Right? Now he gets respect. Especially from Pnuel and Sukkot.
Yeah.
Boy, does he get respect now. Doesn't help him much. Vayashav Gidon ben Yoash min ha-melchama min ma'aleh ha-chares. Gidon ben Yoash comes back from the war. 200 kilometers out, 200 kilometers back. This thing takes time. This is a major effort. וילכוד נער מאנשי סוכות. He finds a young child from the city of Sukkot. וישאלהו, inquires of him, meaning he interrogates him. ויכתוב אליו את שרי הסוכות ואת זקניה, 77 איש. He wrote down for him the names of the 77 elders, leaders of the city of Sukkot. ויבוא אל אנשי סוכות ויאמר, הנה זבח וצמונה. Gideon walks into the city of Sukkot with the heads of Zevach and Tzamunah, and he says, הנה זבח וצמונה, אשר חירפתם אותי, that you taunted me, blasphemed me, saying to me, הקב זבח וצמונה אתה בידיך, כי ניתן לאנשיך היפים לך. How dare you? He took the elders of the city, he took the thorns and the bristles, and he made them know them. As for the tower of Pnuel, he promised that he would take it down. He did. And in so doing, kill the inhabitants of the city. Then he turns to Zevach Betzalmuna, and he says to them, that's the story. Well, let's just finish it. Vayomer Zevach Betzalmuna, Efoha Nashim Asher Haragtem Betavor, where are the people that you executed in Tavor? Where are my brothers? Vayomru, this we read once before. They said back to Gidon, Kamocha, Kamoha, Machad Ketoa Bnei HaMelech, oh, you look just like them. Kingly. Vayomer Achai Bnei Imihim, they were my brothers, from my mother's side. Chai Hashem Luach Yitem Otam Loharagti Etchem, had you not killed them, I may have spared your life. Maybe. I'm not sure. Vayomer LeYeter B'choro, so he turns now to his firstborn by the name of Yeter. Kum harogotam. And he tells him, he instructs him to kill Zevach and Zalmunna. Execute them. V'lo shaf shalaf hanar charbo. Ki yare ki odenu nar. But this poor Yeter is too afraid to do it. He's just a boy. Vayomer Zevach Betzalmuna, Zevach Betzalmuna turned to Gidon and taunt him and said to him, Kumatav Gabanu, you kill us. Ki ke'ish kvuato, man is judged by his strength. So be it. Vayakom Gidon vayarog at Zevach Betzalmuna, vayikach at ha'sha'aronim asher betzavrei gemaleihem. Gidon executes them and took the spoils off of their camels. The rest of the story is part two.
Now we get the flood of questions.
Why did he bring his son into the picture? Why did he execute Penuel and Sukkot? Sachakot, what did Penuel and Sukkot do to him? Fair, right? They didn't give food to quarter to his soldiers, but so be it. They were afraid.
Why did he say after they were my brothers, the sons of my mother?
They were, because they were from a different tribe. But they were, he had sent his, right, they were the heads of the army to the north. All right, so let's spend a few minutes and talk about the influence of this story and some of the issues. We will, some of the questions we'll address today, some of them we will have to wait until next week. The story of Gidon and the battle of Gidon's victory against Midian, in biblical terms, we just read it through quickly, but in biblical terms, is one of the, if not the most dramatic military victory that we will find in Tanakh. The impact of Gidon's victory against Midian is so powerful that generations later, they still talk about this battle as the classic paradigm of success against our enemies.
More than Yericho.
More than Yericho.
A song was made of
Yericho. A song was made of Yericho?
Where was this? Fit the battle.
Oh. You mean a...
It's a Jewish song.
Yeah.
It's a Negro spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Well, songs were made about the Battle of Gidon too, but they're in Tehillim. And therefore, we don't know what music they went to. But if you look on the source page, I'll show you two sources, one in Tehillim and one in Yeshayahu. The one in Tehillim, interesting, we should be familiar with. Because for a long time, we were saying this Tehillim every day. Do you remember immediately after the break of the Intifada, or the breakout of the Intifada, there was a call to recite Tehillim daily after mm-hmm. Tefillah, and the Tehillim that was asked to be said was Pei Gimel. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons for the recitation of Pei Gimel in particular was because of this phrase. This is the beginning, this is the excerpt from Tehillim Pei Gimel, source number one. Ki no'atzu lev yachtav alecha brit yichotu. They conspire, referring to our enemies, together with one accord, they make an alliance against you. Who are the they? Ole Edom v'Ishmaelim, Moab v'Hagrim, all the different enemies, different groups of the time. Edom, Ishmael, Moab, Hagar, Gval v'Amon, Amalek, Pleshet, Yoshvetzor, all the different enemies external enemies surrounding Israel on all sides. Ammon to the east, Amalek to the south, Plishtim to the south, Tsor to the north. Gam Ashur Nilvaimam, the great empire of Assyria, joined them. Hayuzeroa Livne Lotzela, strong arm of the descendants of Lot. What's our tefillah? Our tefillah is Aselahem Kimidyan. Do unto them like you did to Midian. Kisisra Kiyavin Benacha Kishon. Or like the battle of Devar and Barak against Sisra and Yavin in Nachal Kishon, the other great paradigm of military victory. Nishmedu be'Endor. Endor is out back to Gidon. They were destroyed in Endor. Hayu domen la'adama, they became like dung of the earth. Shiteimo nidiveimo, you made their nobles like Keorev v'chizeev v'chizevach uchutzalmuna konesichemo, like Orev and Zeev and their princes like Zevach and Samuna. We said that Tehillim how many times? Daily? For years? We get to this reference, Keorev v'chizeev v'chizevach v'tzalmuna, and what does it mean? Now you know what it means and where it comes from. Similarly, Yeshayahu talks about the pasuk of Perek Yud, Orer Hashem tzvaot shot kemakat midyan b'tzur orev. God shall stir up a smite, a scourge, according to the slaughter of Midian at the rock of Orev. So for generations, the battle victory of Gidon against Midian stood as a kind of classic paradigm of divine engagement against the enemy, 300 against 130,000, military victory, success, complete success, not partial, but total. What made this campaign unique?
I think it's the element of God and the people.
Partially, it's the combination of God and the people.
Seems like it was in a jar.
Right? Right, that's certainly part of it. There's another element, though, that I think is not to be overlooked. And that is that Gideon is the only military leader in Tanakh, certainly in Sefer Shoftim, and really of the only Shofet, and if I can carry the picture back into Sefer Malachim too, or forward into Sefer Malachim, is the only military leader to finish the campaign deep in the heart of the enemy's hometown.
Didn't Malch David do that too?
Spans the borders slightly. David doesn't go anywhere near 400 kilometers out into the heart of Saudi Arabia, 200 kilometers into the heart of Saudi Arabia. David gets into the Golan Heights, gets to Syria, so did the Israeli army. Right, at some point or another. But Gideon takes his 300 soldiers and he carries them 200 kilometers into the heart of Saudi Arabia, into the heart of Karkar. That symbol of Gideon carrying the campaign not just to defend the boundary and the borders of the land of Israel, but to decimate the enemy Ba'asher Husham, where he is to be found, to carry it forward, that became a unique military victory in the annals of Tanakh, and it became a symbol for two military strategies historically from that point forward. One is actually let's talk about the sword of Gideon. Cherev LaHashem veLeGidon. The battle was fought under the banner of the sword to God and Gideon. Cherev LaHashem veLeGidon. Suzanne, that's what you were referring to, the partnership, right? Mm-hmm. Many, many, many years later, in the aftermath of... Well, I won't tell you about the aftermath. Let's see if you can figure it out. Is the Israeli Secret Service launched at some point or another a major campaign called Operation Sword of Gideon, which was not the Nazis.
It was to get all the Munich.
Correct. It was to find the Munich terrorists from the Munich massacre at the Olympics, and to execute them one by one in their hometown. In other words, to find them anywhere in the world. And the symbol was, the name of the operation was called Sword of Gideon. Cherev Gidon. It was also a movie. It was also a movie by the same title. It was based on a book by that title. Right? It was based on a book by that title. But now you understand the meaning of the operational name. Why was it called the Sword of Gideon? Because it was the first operation that the Mossad ever conducted off home turf. It was the first operation in which they took the soldiers of the Shin Bet and they sent them abroad to take out the terrorists. The model, therefore, being the only biblical paradigm to such an event called Cherev Gidon. My only critique of it is that they left out a phrase. Cherev LaHashem LeGidon. And unfortunately, well, what can I tell you? You know, that's unfortunately the story of the challenge of the tension of modern Israel.
From another point of view, how remarkable is that they would take something which seems so secular, but give it the Tanakh context? That 100%. Incredible.
Well, and that's why it's the tension between history and spirituality.
But I'm saying you would perceive the army of Israel as being so secular, but it's really not.
Well, it's historical, but that's my point. It's historical.
Secular. It's very biblical.
It's very biblical.
It leaves out the...
But it took out...
Hashem part.
Right. That's right.
They take the
biblical. I'm not being critical. I just... The observation, I wouldn't have expected... Well, I would have expected, though. I would have hoped. But not the first time nor the last time that expressions from Tanakh have been changed in order to... Or modified in order to reflect the purpose without the same message that the Torah... portrays. The most famous example being the slogan to free Soviet Jewry.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Teddy Teddy Teddy, because that's also used.
Yeah, no, there's a few of them.
Justice.
The slogan for the freedom of Soviet Jewry was "Let my people go." Shalachat ami, except that the Torah never has such a phrase. The phrase in the Torah is "Shalachat ami v'yavduni," let my people go that they may serve me. There was another one, a very famous one, Bilu. Anybody know the acronym Bilu?
Yeah.
Right. So the Bilu was a socialist youth aliyah movement in Europe. Bilu. Beit Yaakov lechu v'na'aleh. Except that the phrase in Yeshayahu is Beit Yaakov lechu v'na'aleh b'or Hashem.
They always do that. The last part,
Hashem.
It was just right? Too big.
It was too much.
Too long.
So these kinds of slight modifications are not uncommon, but nonetheless, I do agree that it is quite significant when you go back to the story and you learn it in Tanakh and you realize the key component of it was precisely the component that they needed, and therefore represented what the story was all about. That's the positive side of the story. The other side of the story, which we're not going to get to today, but we really need to address, and that is Gidon's behavior.
In
Pnu and Sukkot with Bnei Ephraim, ultimately in the aftermath of the battle, this is now, we've now seen Gidon at his best. But there's another side to Gidon and his complexity. And that is, of course, how he deals with Pnu and Sukkot, how he deals with Zevach Butzamunah, his relationship with his son, and the aftermath of this campaign. All of that is sort of the darker chapter of the story of Gidon. And we will try to address that, B'zrat Hashem, next week.